If you approach something with a growth mindset, you see possibilities. If you approach it with a scarcity or a I'm stuck where I am type of mindset, then you will be stuck where you are because you're seeing something with scarcity or just not seeing the excitement or what it can bring, just how everything is weighing down on you, sort of thing.
This is The Entrepreneur Way with Neil Ball. Unlocking the secrets of successful entrepreneurs 7 days a week. Subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter at Neil D. Ball. Napoleon Hill said the power of the mastermind is the driving force. To discover how you can unlock the potential in your business using the power of a mastermind, go to mastermindunlimited.com. And now, here is your host, Neil Ball.
Hello, it's Neil Ball here. Thank you so much for joining me today on The Entrepreneur Way. The Entrepreneur Way is about the entrepreneur's journey, the vision, the mindset, the commitment, the sacrifice, failures and successes. I am so excited to bring you our special guest today, Brenda Batista Mollahan. But before I introduce you to Brenda, I have a quote for you by Brian Tracy. Leaders never use the word failure. They look upon setbacks as learning experiences. The Entrepreneur Way asks the questions so we all get the insight, inspiration, and ideas to apply in our businesses. Brenda, welcome to the show. Are you ready to share your version of the Entrepreneur Way with us?
Absolutely. Glad to be here. So thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You are so welcome, Brenda. And we're glad that you're here today. So thank you very much for being on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Brenda Batista Mollahan is an accomplished entrepreneur, leader, executive consultant, and the president of Inspiring Company Culture. She has been at the helm of many high-performing performance improvement teams. Brenda has managed complex multi-million dollar clients, created simulations to predict business performance, and established scalable methodology that helps companies grow. Brenda, can you provide us with some more insight into your business and personal life to allow us to get to know more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So for the last 25 years or so, which really kind of makes me feel a little older than I feel some days when I say that, I've worked as a consultant and as an executive in companies. And one of the things that I noticed that was kind of universal, regardless of the size of the company or the business unit, was how often I would see teams struggle with high turnover or low contribution rate, meaning coming from the individuals, that they just didn't feel inspired to be part of what they were doing. They just kind of there for the paycheck and just, you know, I'm here. What do you need me to do? I do my job, but that's kind of it. I don't really do anything extra. And then, so as I talk to the individuals and the leaders of those, I'm finding that, well, the individual would feel trapped. Like they couldn't, nobody's listening to their ideas, or they offered something a long time ago and they got cut silenced and nobody took it as something. And then for the leaders, like I have a great team on paper. They look really, really awesome. But I'm not getting out of them what I think I should. I don't understand why they're not performing at the level I would expect them to. And so what I do is I work with those teams, whether the individual or the team lead, and preferably both, really to change their environments and make sure that we get to a place where everybody feels heard and valued. And then we develop a customized performance improvement plan. So you can't improve what you're doing until you have the team backing it and really into, I know what's in it for me as an individual, what's in it for us as a company and as a team. And you have my full backing in any way I can help you. So that excitement to do that sort of thing rather than, oh, those consultants, they came and they did something to us and they left and it didn't work. Because that was usually how it would go. Thanks for the nice thick report. We didn't really get anywhere. So that's what I help people to get past that and say that you're going to sustain the results because it starts with your people.
So with what you do, do you work with the same people? I'm going to Jim Collins thing here. Do you work with the same people on the bus, but you make those people change their philosophy, or is it about getting the right people on the bus in the first place?
Well, it starts with understanding who's on your bus.
Yeah.
So I'll say each of us has a leadership voice. There's a way that we communicate. And I start with people saying, you got to know yourself to lead yourself and others so you can extend it to others. But you have to understand you first and then understand how each of your riders on your bus are behaving in a certain way because they're focused on a way of the way they communicate. And once we understand that, then we can say, okay, the rules of the bus are, don't stand in front of this line because you'll go flying out the window. We start to talk about how to arrange ourselves so that we all have a safe trip and we're there. Mm-hmm. Then we start to notice, well, you just have the person who's just always, I don't know, either chasing the bus, I'm trying to go with your analogy, or they're just sitting there. They might as well be part of the bus itself because they're really... They're not enjoying the trip, or they're just not like all engaged. So we start talking about that particular person because we change the rules to get engagement. They're still not engaging. Now we got to talk about that particular person because they're not in it in an exciting way. And so how do you offboard them? Because it's often the right choice. You do want to offboard somebody. And it's not a bad thing. It's just, it's not a good fit. It's okay. And then we flip that on onboarding so that you don't repeat the habit of, oh, I just needed somebody who is really great at, and you kind of fill in a blank. Mm-hmm. You how do we find the right person? What do you do when the constructs are bringing somebody on that fits your tour bus?
And the thing is, for the person that has to be offboarded, I'm sure they're not always happy about that. In fact, from my own experience, I've found that that's the case. But the truth is, if they're not really lit up by the job that they've got, they're probably doing the wrong job in any case. They're better off going finding a different job and finding something that really does light them up. So you're actually helping them.
Absolutely. And the way I always place it is it's good for both sides because it's not a harsh, you're fired, you're out of here type of thing. It's a discussion that evolves over time because you have to get to a point of understanding of why they aren't engaged or why they don't feel comfortable contributing. If they don't feel comfortable as a leader, it's your responsibility to change that. If they're just refusing to contribute for whatever reasons, like I hate it here or I just do my job and they're not a good fit, it's okay. Then you have the opportunity to say, well, let's talk about what you do like to do, what would you prefer? And oftentimes for myself and my own teams, I would network out and I would say, this person, they're great. Everybody has the great skill set. They're just not for this team. However, they are interested in something that you do. I don't know if you guys wanted to talk. I would do that extension because it's not that people are throwaway. They all have their contributions. It's just, it's not for this team. And so I also, coach leaders of how to do that and have it's more than empathy, but taking the actions to make that happen for somebody because it could be a great reference for you of, well, they're a great place to work. I just didn't fit. Mm. It wasn't my thing. Mm-hmm.
So when you do this, how do you make sure that what you do doesn't stop or go back to how it was once you've finished helping the company to create this better culture and better team environment?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. So, the rules of engagement, if you were the bus rules, mm-hmm. get set in place. And then while we're doing that, I have this constant back and forth with the teams themselves as well as their leads about what's working and what's not. So I actually ask people, pick two things of this list, because each development list is built on your own, I'll say, quirkiness. And what are the two things you're going to work on? And I check in. So I create this accountability system with them to say, you have to try it at least. And then we're going to discuss what worked and what didn't and why not. And that's how we get past it. So what gets put in place is something that becomes almost self-propelling from the team's perspective, because they will start to gravitate towards that. It becomes a different feel for them of participation. And, oh, well, I always get to speak first because I was usually the quiet voice, and now I get to say something first and I'm not getting shut out. And now as a lead, I'm seeing more people participate. We see productivity increases. This is fantastic. This is what I was looking for. So it becomes self-propelling in that way. And they don't go back, because the changes are and the modifications are done stepwise and not, oh, you have to change everything you are right now. It's more of, well, what if you change this thing and work on that? But now I'm going to change this other thing, which seems like it takes a lot of time, but actually it can go relatively quickly because people get excited about it. I have not seen a team not be excited. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have one person who's like, they sat cross-armed and said, I hate this stuff. I really hate it. But I have to say, of all the things I've heard that are kind of, looking and introspective and all that, this wasn't so bad. I was like, oh, I guess that's a compliment. Okay, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. So even that person that's the stalwart against something gravitates towards, like, I can see the benefit of it. And that was what they were saying. I can see the benefit of this. And I get it. I don't love it, but I get it. What happens over time, though, is the team is get a positive peer pressure. Like, this is how we're going to operate. Isn't this exciting? And that you still have the person going, not exciting. Well, now this is your person you need to talk to outside of the group.
And how much difference does it make to the happiness of the whole team?
You become really extended family. So, and not the family that visits that you wish would leave, this is the family that you want to spend time with. Yeah. This is the family that encourages each other. And they're like, oh yeah, you can do it. This is your challenge. You've got it. I know this project's hard or whatever, but you got it. Encouraging, but also challenging to go, oh, what did you think about this, this, and this? They challenge yet support each other, and they know they got each other's back. So it creates this great synergy. I'm just happy, really happy to be there and be part of that team. And you miss each other when you separate and you break up, sort of thing. I've had teams that would say people notice the difference of what it's like to work in a team like that versus their team. And I had people say, can I join your team? Can I just like report to you and be a part of this? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Cause it depends on budget and that sort of thing. But it just goes to show that they notice the difference in that look and feel. And you guys do things that are really exciting and different. And I'm like, yeah, you mean professional development type of stuff, but it's encouraged in a way that they weren't experiencing or hadn't seen. And so that's what I do with teams, is to get them to that level eventually, no matter where you are, is to move them to the continuum.
So when you take a team of people from being sort of maybe not overly loving what they do, not enthusiastic about it, not contributing, to a team that becomes like you've just described, that must make a huge difference to the productivity of the people in there, as well as the happiness, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. So I from personal experience, applying that for my own teams when I was in corporate America, I would see double-digit improvement in productivity. Mm-hmm. By using those techniques. And it didn't matter, in kind of today's environment, it didn't matter if we were together, meeting in the same office space, or separate, meaning remote. So I had been working with remote teams for a little over 6 years, literally spread across the U.S. and Canada. It's North America type of thing. And it didn't make a difference. We didn't have to physically be together. So, you know, the locale doesn't matter. It's literally the culture. I'll go back to the rules of engagement of how you work with a team to create that kind of culture.
What do you enjoy most about what you do?
Well, it's really about, you know, getting people to that next level and helping them reach that next level, because they sometimes they'll feel stuck. Like, what can I do differently? How do I switch something? Because some of my outcomes are great, some of them not so much. What do I do? And so when I see them have that aha moment, what kind of lights go on? Like, oh, they may verbalize sometimes, but other times they're just, their eyes get big and they, you know, that they have this moment of understanding. So you can see their face and their body change, and you just know something just happened there. And sometimes they feel comfortable saying it in a group setting. Sometimes they don't. But I always like to follow up on that, because I want to know what was it that they gained. And so they understand, you know, how they can drive an outcome. And then we have more meaningful discussion. So for me, that's really where I think the magic happens, is in those moments, because it happens with each person at a different rate, but the whole team eventually gets there.
What drives you to do what you do?
Well, I would say actually it's on the flip side of that. So having somebody who's experienced kind of the opposite of what I'm describing. So, you know, being shut out of a team or watching people, you know, take my ideas or restate my ideas, and as if I wasn't in the room, as if it, you know, if my contribution didn't matter. Like, well, that was my idea. Literally, I just said that like 5 minutes ago. That's weird. Or taking credit for something I had done and not telling everybody that this person helped, this person's part of my team and they helped me do this. So, you know, I've been on that side of it, what it feels like that to feel that shut out. And then secondly is with my consulting clients over the years, when I was working for other consulting firms, it was really what I think I said in the beginning. We give them a report, recommendations and all that, and they're like, great. They're excited at first, and then nothing happens, or a little bit happens. But once we as consultants disengaged, the results stopped. Nothing would really stick. It wasn't sustainable. And it was just like, it's sad. You spent good money to have that, to have this advice of expertise and people coming in focused on you. How often do we have somebody who come in and focus on us to say, you know, you're wonderful in these ways and you need to tweak these little things here and there. Let us help you. And it's like, oh, we came in and do a makeover and then we leave and the next day they've trashed a place, or they just let it go back to what it was. And so those two things are really what motivates me and drives me to do what I do.
How do you relax when you're not working in your business?
I have two Bichon Frises. One is 3 years old and one is 8 months. And the 3 year old, I enjoy just training them. So obedience is part of the puppy thing. But the older one is, she's a pet therapy dog. She's certified in that. So we actually go out and volunteer, and she has her public. She likes to go see the kids at school and have a, you know, kind of reading with Rover, even though that's not our name. A reading time with the children. And we go to nursing homes and, you know, just perk people up for the day. She's just so darn cute that I can't just have her for myself. I think people need to, you know, engage with her. But she had to go through a lot of training. Therefore, I had to go through training because it's about handling the dog. But that's really fun because I just enjoy going out with her and having her just kind of share her puppy love, so to speak.
You know, I didn't know that dogs chose to be certified like that.
Well, and the American Kennel Club does different certifications based on that. And so it takes, you know, so much training to get her to that point. Mm-hmm. And she's a little dog, so she's not really a service dog, you know, you think of a larger dog as to be that. So she's not quite to that level, although she probably could be very easily. I'm not sure what she's not going to fetch you something, right? It's like, she's kind of limited. She probably could detect if, you know, you're having a blood sugar event or something like that. But she loves it. She loves her. She's very social. She loves to be out there with people. And so since we can't be out with people right now, we are doing tricks. She's learning how to do tricks because there's also certification for that. So that'll be exciting. We can entertain people in a different way later on.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any entrepreneurial role models?
I do. I think of two when I think of this, because one is Donald Miller. And he does Business Made Simple and Story Brand. These are like two of his offerings. He really is focused on helping people get their marketing messaging right, but clear. And he's very good at it. And so I admire him because he picks something very focused, very specific, and I think not trying to be everybody's everything. So many people go into entrepreneurship. They're like, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to solve everybody's problems. Well, that's not possible. So he's very good at being focused at that. And another one is Michael Hyatt, which is funny because they both started in kind of publishing or writing areas. But on Michael's side, he really grew his business in a way that was conducive to supporting his family values. So he wasn't, you know, my goal is to make $1 trillion. That probably never came out of his mouth. I mean, this is a guy who over time said, I'm going to build something solid that allows me to spend time, I have balance with my other passions, which for him is his family.
Brenda, we've talked about your business and your personal life. Now we're going to go back in time and talk about the time before you were an entrepreneur. What difficulties did you have to overcome when you started your business?
Yeah, so it was funny because they said, you know, what interested me, what I like about my role model is that focus. And I think that's what originally was my problem, was narrowing down to something, not that I... just something I enjoyed, but there's so many things I enjoy and so many skills. There's so many things I thought I could share with people. It's like, oh, people would love this and they would love that. And it was like, well, you can't do all of it. So how do you narrow so that you can grow eventually and be okay with that? Because it's kind of a calming process. You have to calm yourself because you have all these great ideas that you just want to unleash upon the world. It's like, which one is the world asking for right now? That's the one you should go with. And keep in mind, the other ones are still good. They're not bad ideas. It's just think about the timing and, you know, really focus. So that it was very difficult. It was very difficult for me to do.
Did you have any doubts that delayed you starting your business?
I think this is common. I'm not sure, but I've been thinking about it for a few years while I was working full time. It's like, I'm going to do this. What would I do? Yeah. Okay. I can do this. I can do this on my own. And then as I got closer, I was like, I should do it now. No, wait. And the story I was telling myself is, do I really know how to do this? I mean, I know how to consult with somebody, but there are a lot more things you have to consider now as an entrepreneur. You're taking on everything. You're going to be marketing, you're going to be sales, you're doing it all, or at least thinking about it all, because it all fits together. So do you really have what it takes? So I kept going back and forth on that, and in that internal conversation that I think really caused me to delay just taking the first step. And sometimes, you know, it's good to be just pushed out there and just go for it. But that was it. It was more of a back and forth conversation with myself.
What mistakes did you make that slowed your journey?
Yeah, so part of the back and forth is I love to analyze stuff. So I'm an engineer, or at least one of those degrees is in engineering. And that means I love data. I love to research. I want to understand. I want a level of certainty that comes with understanding. And so I think I over-resourced myself on educational materials about things I didn't know, to learn tips and tricks and that sort of thing. So probably overdid it there. And they're all great. So I think it was all money well spent. But it would take too much time. You know, if you literally run through every single book you ever purchased and read all of them from front to end, some of them being textbooks, you're like, whoa, was that really necessary? And so that was kind of the dilemma that is like, that was a bit too much and slowed me down.
What are some of the things that you did before you started your business that would be helpful tips to some of the listeners who haven't yet taken the first step on the entrepreneur way?
Mm-hmm. One thing I would suggest is deciding the form of your company. What I mean by that is, should you be an S corp, a C corp, LLC? I mean, what are some of the tax implications and forms of funding, because things change depending on what form you take. And I remember a cartoon that uses in shape of something, right? Some sort of superhero. But that's literally what you need to consult with somebody. And not saying spending, you know, months agonizing over that decision, but just think about what do you want to achieve with your business and what's the best way to achieve that. And have somebody who's an expert in that explain to you kind of the pros and cons, and then pick one and go forward. Because certainly you want to do that. I've seen too many entrepreneurs like, I'm starting a business. And they just go out and do that. And they're, by de facto, kind of an independent contractor because they really didn't set anything up. And they tried to figure out these processes after the fact. Like, oh, well, shoot, now I have money coming in and I have everything now. Oh, I have liability, you know, insurance and that type of stuff that they're starting to all of a sudden be faced with the facts of, I didn't think through all of that. Well, so that's why I would recommend think about the form you want to take first.
Brenda, we're now going to jump forward in time and talk about the time for when you became an entrepreneur. Do you think culture is important from the beginning in the business?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think it's part of it is because of, you know, what I had experienced in my past working lives and what I was able to change it to. The difference between kind of a bad or toxic culture versus something that's conducive to high production and contribution. Because it's even with my network of people, I do this, like, this is what I'm about. And so we have this conversation to make sure that you're about the same thing, because if we're not, it's not actually going to be a good relationship, whether a partnership or affiliate is just not going to work because we're just not in sync, right? I'm going to have doubts about how you're contributing or what you're going to say. And you know, it becomes part of the brand, really your culture is part of your brand. Because you want your employees or your network to be ambassadors of what you do. You want them to be as excited. So you're not the only one speaking about it. You want them to be lit on fire about how great things are and them telling people. And in the same way you would. So you really want that excitement. And you want them aligned with what the strategy is and how they're contributing to that. Because with that alignment comes that excitement. They understand and they get super productive and driving forward. And when you're getting started, you can go back and forth about, am I going fast enough? I'm going too slow. And I think one of the worst things we can do is compare ourselves to somebody else who, gosh, they started at the same time I did. Look there. They're telling me they have like three times the revenue I do. What? How'd that happen? You know, so I think really don't do that comparison. Really, the journey is where you are, where you should be. And the people in your culture help you get there.
I think with any kind of comparison, though, really, you should just compare yourself with where you were maybe yesterday or last week or whatever, because that way you can make incremental changes. Whereas when you start looking at someone else's business, you're not really, you're not thinking about your own business, are you? Because their business is going to be slightly different to yours.
Yes, and I would say their business is none of your business. So maybe you should keep your nose to yourself. That's right.
How do you make sure that you work with the right people so that they fit with the culture in your business?
So that's part of the, I'll call it onboarding. So if I'm hiring them directly or if I'm affiliating with them, it really starts with a conversation of, let me tell you what, not just what we do, but what we're about, and make sure that that fits, because especially with an affiliate or the network, it's the same sort of thing. I don't want you there just to collect revenue from me. I know I'm a revenue source for you, but I want you to be engaged. I want you to be as excited about what I'm trying to achieve as I am. So we have those discussions, and it's easy to find where you have a click in a good way, or when somebody is just yesing you. I don't know if that makes sense, but they'll just say, yeah. And I keep going with their line, and like, that's not really going to fit. It starts, you know, with a conversation like that. And then with affiliates and partners, it goes a little bit deeper as we continue to have meetings and, you know, kind of find out what are opportunities where we could work together. And that's usually where, you know, the puzzle pieces, they'll either fit or they won't. It becomes more clear because it's more like company to company. When I'm hiring people, though, it goes a little bit more deep, or because if I'm going to hire you on, I'll actually give you an assignment to do, kind of like it's a mock assignment. Sometimes it's actually one I need to have done anyway. Sometimes not. I need to understand that, can you do the job? Mm-hmm. I also don't want you yes-yesing me in the interview process. I need to see it, because it depends on what it is, if it's editing or if it's writing sales proposals. I need to see you actually do it. I want to see you present. So I will run people through this type of thing. And you're going to present to me. Pretend we're going to role play. I'm your customer. Do your sales pitch. And it's a quick way to find out comfort level. It's a way to understand their skill. And, you know, because we are role playing, I'll give them a set of facts and information they should know, and I'll ask them questions. And sometimes the questions will be that it wasn't in the script, so to speak, because I want to understand what they're going to say. I want you to tell me if you don't know something. I'm looking for that honesty, that integrity, and I want that feedback. And I'm also not going to hire somebody who's going to make up answers. And I've had people do that before. It's like, well, I believe the answer is 10. I'm like, that wasn't even in the facts. Why are they coming up with this? But it's good. It's a good way to see, because I know how they're going to respond. Because in a real situation, should I hire them, that's what they would do, right? Their tendency is going to be like, oh, well, I don't want to disappoint you. I'll answer it. And you're not disappointing me. I'd rather you say, I don't know. I have to go find out. Okay. So, you know, those are types of things I do. They're a little bit different depending on if affiliate or if a hire on, but that's, and I recommend to my clients that for hires that they do the same sort of thing. It's not just a survey of the resume. Certainly the resume is, you know, a way to get started, but it goes a lot deeper because you need to know that they can do the work and how to do the work. A little bit of behavioral interviewing. You know, the tell me about a time when, and kind of fill in the blank. It's useful because you're listening for certain things. You want to know fit of culture, a fit of values.
Knowing what you know now, is there anything that if you'd known it when you started out that would have helped you to shortcut the learning curve?
Yeah, I would have hired a marketing assistant or virtual assistant straight out when I was getting started, because I've learned that they can really help push the message forward. So this is more of a marketing assistant. You can push a message out there and help build a pipeline, because as you're getting started, as I said before, you now have everything to be concerned about. Where is the best use of resources for help? And it would have been there. Now, I've since adjusted that, of course, course corrected for that. But certainly, I should have invested in maybe some of those educational dollars, and I think of it, should have gone to that person with that expertise instead in the beginning.
How much does gut feeling influence your decisions in your business?
We'll see. The engineer in me is going to say never, but that's not true. That would be a lie. I do like to have data though. Mm-hmm. So, but I use the data to either confirm or, you know, deny my hypothesis. So I'll go with the gut, I'll form the gut opinion because I like to test my intuition. So this is not right. Then I'll go back to the data because I think it's important. But when you're starting, when you have a base of zero, like I have nothing, I have no baseline to go back to, it has to be intuition. You're going to have to go with a feel until you get, you know, something, some sort of trend going, and you have one data point. It's like, well, that's not very useful. You can't say, well, compare to that one time. Well, you don't want to always compare that one time when that was, could have been a great time, could have been a bad time. You don't want to do that. And so that's where the data fails, right? So you need to, in the beginning, think you do have to rely more on your intuition. And certainly I did. And now I'm starting to transition to more, oh, now data, yay. Makes me feel better.
What makes you uncomfortable as an entrepreneur?
What makes me uncomfortable? I don't think I really ever get comfortable trying to pitch an idea. And I actually try not to think of it that way. It's like I can help you solve a problem, but it's an uncomfortableness being salesy. And I also think this is not uncommon that people, unless that's your profession, unless you're a salesperson, you kind of, this naturally comes to you. It makes me uncomfortable because I'm like, oh, I'm going to convince you of something. Like, I don't want to wrestle with you on an idea. I want us to come to a conclusion together that it's going to fit and you're ready for it or you're not. So I don't, like, I got to make a quota or anything like that. I don't push it that way. It's like, it'll naturally fit or it won't. And if it doesn't, it doesn't mean that it won't later. Maybe you're not, like I said, you're not ready for it. It'll come. You have to mature on your journey a little bit for this to make sense. And you have to want to engage in that. And that makes, for me, the quote unquote sales process easier. Mm-hmm.
And what do you think are some of the secrets to success?
First of all, I think it's about putting yourself in your customer's shoes, really having that empathy, understanding where they are, what they're feeling, what it can look and feel like. Also doing your research on them in particular. So that, you know, just not saying, well, the industry trend is blah, blah, blah. Well, that's fine. And industry trends are fine when you're doing newscast, that sort of thing. But when you're talking to the individual about their business, you know, their company, it's understanding them and how the market trends, so to speak, are affecting them. What's happening in their geography. And because it's a little bit different. And so that you feel that, have that empathy, but then also be able to have the statements, I'll say, of authority that say, well, I can help you in this way. I can say confidently because I've helped, you know, 10, 15, 20, whatever your numbers happen to be, real numbers, that I can help. That I've seen a situation very similar. So let me walk you through it. And they become comfortable with that. But let me walk you through it is not 1,000 steps to a better future, right? It's like, let me simplify that for you because I want to guide you and help you through it. And it's a partnership that we'll get through it together. I don't have all the answers. You have all the answers. My job is to help you unlock them and pull them out and then bring them to your team and make sure we sustain them into the future, making people feel comfortable with that process.
Life is made of constant change, whether we like it or not. And many people say that the only constant in life is change. Brenda, how do you try to keep up with change?
Well, back to my education thing. I really do. I think self-education programs are great for that because you don't have to always go back to university and study something. And, I get ads all the time saying, come back and get an MBA. I'm like, I'm kind of done with the school thing, the formal. But certainly the latest of what's happening, how can I get that in a bite-sized form or format? And I think it's choosing wisely on the self-education programs from trusted sources. I'll say trusted sources. And who do you know in what area you focus on that you admire or that you believe this is aligned with my values and this is how I want to conduct myself, and I see that they were in my position a few years ago. I want to follow what they say because I believe them versus somebody's just trying to, kind of hawk an online program at you. It's like, it says it's going to do it, but I don't know this person. I don't know where it's coming from. It's what I do. I actually try not to watch the news too much because it focuses on the doom and gloom and, I purposely don't focus on doom and gloom in my business.
What is your favorite book on entrepreneurialism, business, personal development, leadership, or motivation? And can you tell us why you have chosen it?
Yeah, I actually two come to mind. Is that all right?
Have two. We get a bonus.
Bonus. Okay. The first one is Mindset by Carol Dweck. Mm-hmm. And that one is because it dives into how we talk to ourselves and how your mindset determines your outcome in every aspect of your life. So she goes into family and relationships and as well as business and growth. And it's about, how you can fulfill your potential by how you think, because you are with you and you are in your mind all the time. Sometimes there's, remnants of somebody else told you something, but certainly you're listening to that. And if you approach something with a growth mindset, you see possibilities. If you approach it with a scarcity or a I'm stuck where I am type of mindset, then you will be stuck where you are because you're seeing something with scarcity or just not seeing the excitement or what it can bring, just how everything is weighing down on you, sort of thing. So I really enjoyed that because I've actually recommended to a couple of people. Like, are you trying to tell me something? It's like, no. I just think it's a good read. It's a good read. You should do it. The other one is back to my engineering background. It's kind of an oldie, but a goodie. It's The Goal by Eli Goldratt. And it's talking about systems thinking and how everything is related. And it's told in a story format. So it's an educational book, but it's not a textbook. But it does in its story course tell you about how things relate to each other and how processes relate. How do you identify bottlenecks and how you relieve them? And how should you set up your processes so that you can get the highest production in a way that doesn't, overload or kind of cause the wheels to go flying off when you do it? Because you're going to the capacity constraints. You have to understand all of that. But he does it in a way, like I said, it's told in a story. It makes it very consumable by most people. So you don't have to be statistical expert, or you don't have to, as people say, don't over engineer the results. Like, yes, you don't have to be an engineer to understand. This is literally a story about a guy running a production plant and the issues that come up in that. But he does an eloquent job of just explaining concepts that are true engineering concepts that once you get a hold of them, you're like, oh, well, it's kind of common sense. Yeah, well, my professors probably wouldn't like that. That was both, yeah, but engineering's common sense. It is to a certain extent. And so I love that book as well.
Folks, when you have a busy life, listening to audiobooks is a great way to expand your knowledge in the time when you may be doing other things, such as driving or when you are at the gym. We have a special offer for you of a free audiobook of your choosing. To choose your free audiobook, go to www.freeaudiobookoffer.com. As long as you've not already signed up, then you will qualify. Brenda, are you ready to speculate about the future?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
What one thing would you do with your business if you knew that you could not fail?
That's a very interesting question. And I say that because everything I do has a possibility of failure. Mm-hmm. So I know you said project, just like, well, that could be tomorrow. So it may not be a long-term thing. It's also a short-term. But literally, I would say instead of having an affiliate network, I would actually hire consultants. I would bring people on full-time. Mm-hmm. In different locations, meaning make it more of a worldwide type of a global approach, because I believe, healthy cultures is something that every business, regardless of where you are, can really benefit from. And there will be a need for that. So I would bring those people on. And then also as part of that, I'll say host an innovation lab. So what I mean by that is I would want to sponsor, not necessarily just students, but I won't say students, but people who are coming with these new ideas of how can we do things differently? And, they want to apply it to entrepreneurship, but they're coming out of kind of a traditional study program that says you either go to research or you go to work. And they don't talk about being an entrepreneur. I think a lot of them have ideas, and they just need somebody to help fund it and help them, kind of navigate through many of the topics we've discussed about how do I bring that idea out to a market? What do I do with that? And how do I make that happen? And so I would love to do that, knowing that some of those would be failures, right? They would be commercially a failure, but on the flip side, they would be a success because of the life or lives touched with that opportunity to give it a go and see what happens.
What skill, if you were excellent at it, would help you the most to double your business?
Yeah, I've got to go back to sales. Mm-hmm. So having a sales funnel and developing a very strong sales funnel is absolutely would double, triple, it would, multiply it, multiples, not just a double, I think.
How can you get better at sales?
Well, certainly is by focusing on the right messaging that talks about solving a problem for somebody else. So it's not about my solution. It's not about being in love with your product or your service, because that only serves you. It's about how you serve somebody else. And in that, you have to get the right messaging out. And so certainly having the right team around that, copywriters who really know how to put the right words together, and marketing campaigns that talk about how do I get people excited? How do I drive traffic to what I'm talking about? And it's not to convert them right away, right? This is about getting people interested in the topics, getting people excited about it, and then converting. So it's definitely a skill set, and there's a team that should go. I think I should go with it, because I don't think one person can do it all very well by themselves.
In 5 years from now, if a well-known business publication was publishing an article on your business after talking to your customers and suppliers, what would you like it to say?
I think I would like it to say, inspiring company culture has helped us to be a best place to work year over year. Let's see, our employees are like our brand ambassadors. They love working here. We keep adding new clients because we almost don't have to market. People just come to us because they know what we're about. And everybody who works with us gets a bit of that excitement. And, you know, I guess it'd be okay to say, you know, they've been with us since we started, and they continue to help us find new ways to grow and to really pinpoint what we can do differently. They're not, so I say they're with us all the time. They're not draining us of money. They're actually invigorating us with new ideas and challenging us in a way that we wouldn't do ourselves. I should save that for later, actually.
It's now time for three golden nuggets. Brenda, what is your favorite quote and how have you applied it?
So it goes back to a mindset thing. It's actually Henry Ford who said, if you think you can do a thing or you think you cannot do a thing, you are right. So this is multifold. First, being the assembly line and being an industrial engineer, that kind of, you know, is true. It resonates. And it's because it's self-talk. It's things that we say to ourselves. If you decide you can do something, you will. And often I think we're our own harshest critic. Because we'll play the same thing over and over again. Well, we'll talk about that failure to ourselves. Like, oh, remember that time? Oh, how horrible that was. We kind of amplify the volume and colors that we use to describe it to make it like this most dreadful thing, and we'll dwell on it. And it'll just repeat and go, oh, yeah, and that's why we can't ever be successful. Because remember, we did all that. Oh, yeah, we did that. But then we, on the other hand, we don't say, but we did that one time. What do we learn from that? And kind of change it around and say, well, what can we learn from it? But also think of all those achievements. Oh my gosh, all the things we may take for granted that other people don't. And I know a lot of people say an attitude of gratitude is a nice slogan, but certainly is true to be grateful for the things you have achieved. And maybe start dwelling on those. Okay, you know what? I did this, and that. That's pretty good. I had to pat myself on the back. And I don't mean it in a cheesy way. You don't have to do that. You really have to think about those things and congratulate yourselves, because we don't always fail. We also don't always succeed, right? The whole point is you try it and you'll see what the result is. There are certain things that you can do to make it better. And certainly you learn from the times that didn't work out so great. You know, apply, well, I'll try this differently now and move on that and make it an opportunity for success.
Do you have any favorite online resources you can share with us that would be useful for other entrepreneurs?
I do. So there's a company called Qualtrics. It's qualtrics.com. For entrepreneurs, they have free resources that talk about employee engagement. How do you create an employee engagement plan, as well as a customer journey, so you improve your customer satisfaction? All this stuff is free, which I think is fantastic. Now, they have a platform that they sell, and of course, that's where they make their money. But you know, they're an organization that believes in helping folks grow. So that you, I will say, grow into their platform. I've experienced them on both sides as part of a corporation that, you know, used the platform for our customer satisfaction serving and more, but also as an entrepreneur, it's like, oh, these are great resources, because it helps you think through things. And anytime somebody helps you think through, you know, an issue in a way you didn't think of, I think is a great resource. And it's free. So I like the price. The price is really good.
What is your best advice to other entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I would say allow yourself to dream. And when you're doing that, answer two questions. So the dream is to give yourself the vision. What do I want? What, in the perfect scenario, what will happen with my business? And then ask yourself again these two questions: is with the ultimate, what do you ultimately want? So the more detail you have, the better, because you want to clarify that. You know, say I make $10 million or whatever, Okay. That's not necessarily compelling. You know, a vision of, well, I want to have an office building with four floors, and, you know, the bottom is dedicated to that innovation lab I was talking about, and the next three, you know, that level of detail, you start to get into the story. You can kind of feel it. You got to get this emotional thing going with it. But then also say, why do you want that? What is it about that you just described? Why do you want it? But ask yourself that question at least five times, because you're going to get to the root of why you want it. And it's the five whys. It's actually a technique about getting to the root. Why do you want it? And the why you want it is really important, because in the tough times, it's what's going to drive you through. When things aren't going according to plan or are less than expected, your expectations, you're not meeting your own expectations, it's what will push you through and not give up. And being an entrepreneur means you just keep going because you believe in what you're doing. Because if you don't believe in it, I think you should go back to work and have a job. You know, not that being an entrepreneur isn't work. I'm sorry, it is a lot of work. But, you know, go have a job then, if it's not something that truly inspires you and drives you to do more.
Folks, if you didn't manage to get a note of Brenda's favorite resource or her favorite books, you can find the links on Brenda's show notes page. Just go to theentrepreneurway.com and search for Brenda or Brenda Batista Mollahan in the search box. Brenda, is there anything else you would like to add about your business?
I would just say, you know, it's always a pleasure to help people talk about culture and what the culture is about in their company. And I enjoy doing that. So certainly, you know, my people can feel free to reach out to me, ask questions, or say, hey, do you have any helpful techniques? I love talking about this, the topic of company culture and team culture and team performance, and happy to share and do ideas back and forth.
Well, thank you for that, Brenda. And Brenda, thank you for coming on the show today and telling us about your journey as an entrepreneur and talking about what you're doing in your business, inspiring company culture, and how you're helping other companies to create better company, better culture and better teams in their business. You've also thought back about your journey as an entrepreneur. You've shared some of your experiences with us. You've shared some of your thoughts and perspective on what it takes to be a successful entrepreneur. And you've also given us some great advice as well. So thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. I enjoyed talking about all that, and it was wonderful. So thanks so much.
Well, thank you for saying that, Brenda. I enjoyed our conversation as well, and you're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Folks, you have been listening to Neil Ball chatting with Brenda Batista Mollahan on The Entrepreneur Way. If you have enjoyed the show, please share it on social media and subscribe to our email on The Entrepreneur Way website. Also, please add your comments on Brenda's show notes page on The Entrepreneur Way website at www.theentrepreneurway.com and search for Brenda Batista Mollahan in the search box. Thank you for listening, and until the next episode tomorrow, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to The Entrepreneur Way. Subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter at Neil D. Ball.